Okay. Usually, when I first started giving shiurim, I used to, after each shiur that I gave when I was still fresh, I kept having the experience of coming away from the shiur, and then the next 2 days thinking of things that I should have said, and how I should have put things. And then what I would often do was come back the next shiur and start, I wanted to add this and explain that, until I got a little bit experienced, and I said, you just don't do that. What you said, and I'll move on. Yet, I do want to tie things up from last week, because we discussed a lot of details last week about the Leil HaSeder, but there is a general perspective that has to be maintained as to exactly what it is we're trying to achieve in all the discussions we had. So now, if we'll just sum up in a nutshell what it was that we discussed last week, that is that our agenda at the Seder is to do our best to relive, to bring back to life the experiences in Mitzrayim. That's what it's all about. That's really our means of continuing the Messiah. Keeping the Messiah alive and conveying it on to the next generation. To actually live it. And that's what we're trying to do with the Leil HaSeder. Now, what is it that we're trying to live? Of course, all the wonders that we saw. But if we have to... Was it just that, we were slaves, and this was one of the greatest experiences of our history, and therefore, that's what we're celebrating on Pesach, and that's what we're passing on? No. The nutshell, the one phrase that defines it all is, Pesach is when we got to know Hashem. That was really the significance of everything that happened then. It's not that, alright, yes, we were in trouble, Hashem did all kinds of wonders for us, why is it that we commemorate that instead of commemorating the virus war with Sisra or Sancheiriv? Well, because that was larger scale and these are smaller scale. No. There's an inherent difference between Leil Pesach and all the other Nisim. Leil Pesach is commemorating our getting to know Hashem. That's really what the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim was about. In fact, we'll discuss this more in detail later, but it wasn't circumstantial. It's not that since the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, Hashem had to get them out and this is what it took, but exactly the other way around. The whole thing was manipulated by Hashem in order to show the Jewish people everything He showed them, because, now, is that fair to the Mitzrayim? Okay, we're going to leave that for now. But, for the purpose of, we'll put it into simple terms, Hashem was courting the Jewish people. This is really what we're trying to relive at the Leil HaSeder. Getting to know Hashem. We're getting to know Him again. He introduced Himself to us at Mitzrayim through the 10 Makas, as we'll be discussing at length. And that's what it is that we're coming to relive. In Mitzrayim we learned two of the three most fundamental principles of the Torah. That's what Pesach is about. Two of the three most fundamental themes in the Torah. Number one is who Hashem is. And number two is His relationship with the Jewish people. Those are two of the three themes of the Torah. Number three is, that wasn't at Pesach, it was introduced kind of at Pesach, mainly at Shavuos, that their connection to Hashem is through the Torah. So this is really why Pesach is so fundamental. Pesach, that's why it's also called the Chag of Emunah. Chag of Emunah, because that was where we learned, we were introduced to Hashem, that's where we got to know Hashem. Okay, so that's really just tying up the overview of what we're trying to achieve at the Leil HaSeder. And now we'll move on to the next stage of our discussion. We'll start approaching the Leil HaSeder itself. So this week is going to be a little bit more technical, because really the highlight of the Leil HaSeder, as we discussed last week, is Magid. And that's why, again, like I said last week, it always annoys me when you see in all the Haggadahs, how Magid is depicted with an open book. Right? In all the Haggadahs, that's the picture for Magid. An open Haggadah. Which basically denotes reading. Right? You read through it. Recitation. Magid doesn't mean to recite. Magid means to tell. Magid should be the most exciting part of the Seder. You have to put in time before it, beforehand, to plan it so that it should be that way. It could be that way. You can turn it for your kids into the most exciting part of the Seder, not the part of the Seder that they're waiting to get through in order to eat already. But that's not going to be our subject this week. We're going to spend time on the Seder until Magid. So we'll begin with Kaddish. We sit down for Kaddish. So the truth is, in order to appreciate Kaddish, Kiddush, we really have to step back for a moment to really just understand a little bit what the significance of Kiddush is. What the significance of a kos of wine is. So, the truth is that the concept of Kiddush in a big way has a lot to do with the general theme of the Seder, which is to make impressions upon the children. By the way, this is something very, very important to remember. As we'll see by Karpas, we see a regular theme throughout the Leil HaSeder is, a regular agenda is to arouse the children's curiosity. If we'll translate that into more practical terms, the focus of the Leil HaSeder is the children. That is the focus. That's what the children, is what the Leil HaSeder is all about. It's not about you being inspired. It's not about the guests. It's not about Kiruv. Those are important things too. But the focus of the Leil HaSeder is the children. Now, okay, that's parenthetical. Back to Kaddish. What is Kiddush? So Kiddush really is designating the day. We declare the nature of the day of Kiddush. Right? We have a chiyuv to do that. A chiyuv midoraisa. As the Chachamim said, to do it over a cup of wine. You know the midoraisa? He eats it by just declaring today is Shabbos Kaddish. Today is Yom Tov. But the Chachamim said you have to do it over a cup of wine. What's the idea of the cup of wine? What's being expressed through the cup of wine? What are we supposed to take away from the cup of wine? So first of all, part of the point of the cup of wine is Ein zechira ela b'yayin, like Chazal say. Remembering is through wine. Chachamim bring a pasuk to that. The Torah says you have to be zocher sima Shabbos, and there's a pasuk that associates wine with zechira, so that's why you should do Kiddush over wine. Now that seems like one of these cryptic drushes. That what's the significance of it? Okay, there's a pasuk, you have to be zocher sima Shabbos, and there's a pasuk connecting zechira to wine. So why? Practically, what does it mean? What does wine have to do with zechira? What's that? Well, wine makes you forget. Well, it certainly makes you lose awareness. So what's the idea? So the answer is, if you think about it a little bit, the truth is that the answer is obvious. Association. When you make a point of sitting down and declaring Shabbos over a cup of wine, that creates an impression on the mind. You sit down for a toast, it's a special occasion. The Kiddush over the wine turns it into a special occasion. It turns it from mentioning it, from declaring it, from designating the day, into a special occasion, a special experience. And of course, we know, right? What more stands out in the kids' minds? The nusach of the tefillah, in which you mentioned Shabbos? Or the cup of wine, right? The Kiddush cup of wine, it's such a Jewish symbol. Right? The Kiddush cup of wine, that's exactly the idea. We create an association, we're making an impression upon the mind. Designating the day, that's what grants the day its special nature. The truth is, in general, this is a central focus in the Chlal, in what Oynig Shabbos, Kavod Shabbos is all about. What's the source of the mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos? I'm talking about Shabbos now, we're going to apply it to the other Kiddushes, but just in order to understand in a general way what the idea is. What's the source of Kavod Shabbos, of the mitzvah to be Mechabed Shabbos, to honor Shabbos and to enjoy Shabbos? It's a pasuk that says, Im tashiv mi Shabbos ha'aglecha, etc. V'karoso le'Shabbos oineg, if you will designate Shabbos as a delight, L'kadosh Hashem mechuvad, and you designate the holy day of Hashem as an honorable day. Oz tisanegal Hashem. It says, then you will enjoy Hashem. Ve'kavticha abamasei oretz. I'll ride you on the highest of places. Va'achalticha es nachlas Yaakov avicha. I'll feed you the inheritance of your father Yaakov. What's the pasuk saying? We are being enjoined to designate Shabbos as a delight. What's the idea? Ikdosh Hashem mechubed. Shabbos is a very, very special day for Hashem. How do we connect to it? How do we connect to it? We connect to it by making it into a special day for us. How do we do that? Why don't you sit down at the table and talk about the concepts of Shabbos? No, that's not going to do the same for making an impression upon your mind as the style of a Shabbos Suda and as the aura created by special Shabbos clothing and by the special Shabbos foods. And that's epitomized with Kiddush. Kiddush is what creates that special aura, what gives the day its special characteristic, characterizes the day as a special day. So therefore, we designate the day as a day of Kedusha, as a special day, as a memorable day, by creating that association with the cup of wine. But the truth is that it's a little more than that too. It's deeper than that also. So is that all? It's just an issue of creating some sort of mark. But the truth is that all of us are familiar with enough psukim where a person's fate in life is described as a kois, as his cup. Right? Hashem says, yeah, I'll have them drink the cup of poison, right? When he talks about the destruction of the nations. Kois hatar ela, the cup of poison. David HaMelech says, Yishanto b'Hashem Eloishi, koisi revoya, my cup is overflowing. That's how David describes his ideal state in life. Also David says, koisi yeshuais esa, right? I lift up the cup of salvation. So what is a cup? Cup is in general representing the fate that a person holds in his hands. Each person's individual fate is represented through his cup. That's his cup. This person has a cup of tzaris, right? What's that? His portion in life. That's it. Some people have a cup of tzaris. Right? Plenty of psukim. If you think about it, you'll come up with plenty of examples of psukim expressing it in this way. So therefore, when we're coming and designating whatever the day is with its special properties, we're doing more than just saying that it's the day. We're connecting ourselves to the day. We're saying this is our portion in life. This is our lot in life. If it's on Shabbos, then we're saying we were granted. This is the day that Hashem created the heavens and earth. How is that our lot? Because we were granted the glorious function of testifying to that. We're the ones who serve as Hashem. Atem Eidai. Right? That's why Vayichulu, we say it's standing. Because you say it is Eidus. You're testifying. So, at least in Shul you say it's standing. At home there's different minhagim. But the point is that through Kiddush we are testifying to Hashem as the creator of the world. And it's not just that we're testifying, but that we were given that task. We were designated as the witnesses of Hashem. Hashem's witnesses. Goyish Shavas Chayev Misa. Not anybody can just come along and decide he's going to wear the king's emblem and he's going to represent the king. Person who decides he's going to be a self-appointed ambassador will be killed. That's why a goy Shavas Chayev Misa. So therefore we show this is our lot, this is our portion. Kiddush, testifying to Hashem as creator of the world. Now, of course, on Pesach, the concept of Kiddush is a bit different. We hold the cup in our hand, and we say, Shal Kiddushonu mikol am, V'ray memanu mikol ha-shoin, V'kiddushonu b'mitzvaysav. Right? Pesach, we declare Hashem designated us as His nation. Now He took us out of Mitzrayim. This is our lot in life. A person should think that as he's drinking down the grape juice, the wine. I say grape juice, I use grape juice. Probably most of you are true men and you use wine. But I use grape juice. I'm something of a sissy. But I mix in a little bit of wine by the Seder for the first two cases, maybe a third of a cup, then it's already too much for me. But when you're drinking it down, think what you're doing. This is my Latin life. This is what I'm drinking. This is the kais that Hashem gave me to drink. The kais of and This is our kais. This is the kais that we drink. So this is how we start. That's Kaddish. Now, as we move on to Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, the truth is that in a very general way, this is all really very technical. We're just going to go with the plain Pashat Pshat of what we're doing with Kaddish, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. It's disappointingly technical. First, let's just in order to have our baseboard to start, what's going on? Well, Urchatz is because you're supposed to wash before you eat a vegetable dip, right? Before you eat a wet food. So there's really not much more to elaborate on that, seemingly. So it's circumstantial. You're going to eat a wet food, you have to wash. Okay. Karpas. What's the significance of karpas? Why do we do karpas? So you should ask why we do karpas. That's all. So the Gemara says, Hekeira. We do karpas in order to do something unusual so that the kids should ask what's going on. Also, pretty technical. Yachatz? So that's all. I mean, there's not really much more to it. We do something weird, that's all. We want you to pipe the kids' interest, do something strange, and the kids will wake up. Yachatz? Also, there's no mitzvah of yachatz in and of itself. Is yachatz a mitzvah? Break the matzah in half? Inherently. Is that a mitzvah? No. You're supposed to use half a matzah for achilas matzah. You're supposed to use half a matzah for afikoyman. How do you get a half a matzah? You break a matzah in half. So there, urchatz, karpas, yachatz are... The baseboard is that these are really technical elements of the Seder before you really get to the highlights of the Seder. And the truth is that in the big perspective, that is how it is. These are not the highlights of the Seder. The highlights of the Seder are from Magid and on. Magid is a highlight, Matzah is a highlight, Morah is a highlight, Afikoyman is a highlight, Kairich is really Matzah and Morah. And these are the more peripheral parts of the Seder. But at the same time, now that we just presented it in a basic way, let's back up and see that actually there is more significance to this. Because, as usual, as with almost all elements of Yiddishkeit, nothing is just technical. Everything has deeper significance. Everything has deeper significance. Even if the pashat, the pshat, is technical. So, let's start with Urchatz, which is really the most challenging, because Urchatz really does seem to be mamish, a pure technicality. You are eating something wet. Halacha is, you're supposed to wash before you eat something wet. Is there anything more to it? So the truth is, on a deeper level, this also has symbolism that you can use to convey to the children as well. That we wash our hands twice throughout the Seder. Washing the hands, of course, is an inyan of purification. In fact, there are certain places in the Torah where complete immersion, complete tevila, is referred to as v'rochatz yodov b'mayim. You wash your hands. That's also how people express it in English too. To wash your hands of something, right? Means to completely detach yourself. Washing the hands is purification. And Sfarim right that it's significant that we wash our hands twice throughout the Seder, both before the Karpas and before Matzah, because we go through two levels of purification at the Leil HaSeder. Tzayasoi lo yiruchatz. We are cleansing ourselves of the tzoya, of the filth of Mitzrayim. And we do that in two stages. So again, this is not the pashat, the pshat. You have to remember, what is the pshat in washing? The pshat in the washing is, because you have a halacha to wash for a wet vegetable, and you have a halacha to wash for bread. But the added significance is this. We go through two stages of purification of the Leil HaSeder. Now, the Sfarim that present this, where I saw it put down, don't add much more elaboration. That's all. Yes? Yitzias Mitzrayim, commemorating Yitzias Mitzrayim, involves two stages of purifying ourselves from the filth of Mitzrayim. So, there also, we can leave it at that and say, Okay, Yoideichein, those who understand the deeper secrets of Torah know what's going on. But the truth is that we can also draw on Rabbi Tzadok of Lublin, who actually does go, he doesn't say it in this context, but it works out beautifully, and says that yes, there were two fundamental stages in Yetzias Mitzrayim. The truth is, we see it in the Gemara too. The Gemara says that there were two stages of the Geula. There was the nighttime Geula, and there was the morning Geula. Meaning? And the Gemara has a whole discussion, right? We learned this Gemara in Brachas. The Gemara says, the nighttime Geula wasn't the big Geula. It was a Geula, it was a shtickle Geula. And the morning Geula was the big Geula. Now, technically, what were these two Geulas? It was at nighttime that we were able to leave. We were freed at nighttime. We could have left. In the morning we left. Now we might say that it's the other way around. When is the Geula? When Pali told you, that's it, you're free to go. Now we decided to dawdle until morning. Wouldn't we think that the first Geula is the main Geula? That's when we got our pass. In the morning we left. Say that's a technicality. Wouldn't we think that? So Tzadok says that actually no. On the deeper level, the true Geula only happened afterwards, because they were free. They were free to leave, but they were still inside the muck, the filth of Mitzrayim. They didn't actually leave. What's the point of the Geula? The point of the Geula is not just that now, instead of working for Parai, I can stay home and watch TV. Or even, I can stay home and have a little Seder. The real Geula came when they were actually completely raised above. They stepped outside of the whole influence of Mitzrayim, the whole atmosphere of Mitzrayim. It was Geula Snapshenu. They stepped out from Mitzrayim with the whole atmosphere, with the whole influence, everything going on. And now they stepped into a new world, a new sphere of reality. They stepped into the Anane HaKavod, into Hashem's hands. That was the Geula. Leaving Mitzrayim, leaving the Tumah of Mitzrayim, leaving the influence of Mitzrayim, leaving everything they grew accustomed to in Mitzrayim, and stepping into a completely new reality, a new existence, a completely new existence. An existence of the Anane HaKavod. An existence of being on a completely different plane. To an extent, a utopian plane. Outside Olam Hazeh. That's really what was going on in the 40 years of the Midbar. They lived on a plane above this world. That's the Geula. In fact, you have to realize the transition, the extreme transition that was made at that time. For example, the Chassam Sefer says, the pasuk says, "V'lo nacham alekim derech eretz pelishtim ki karevu ki amar alekim peni nachem am roisim uchama v'shavu mitzrayim." Hashem says that when the Torah says that when Hashem took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, He did not take them derech eretz Pelishtim, which literally will translate as through the land of the Pelishtim, because it was nearby. Because Hashem said, "Oh, when a milchama comes up, when they're suddenly facing a threat with the Pelishtim, they might run back to Mitzrayim." Chassam Sefer gives a very interesting, deeper interpretation of this pasuk. As a person might wonder, it seems strange. Klal Yisrael came straight from Mitzrayim to Matan Torah. Wouldn't it make sense first to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim and first, these are slaves with a slave mentality, right? First, train them to become decent human beings. Train them to become decent human beings. And then take them to Matan Torah. Then take them to Matan Torah. So the Chassam Sefer says, the pasuk here is explaining that no. Lo'nocham elikim derech eretz plishtim. This is Chiddush of the Chassam Sefer. It says the plishtim were a cultured bunch. They were a cultured bunch. Derech eretz. Okay? Hashem did not want them to first take them through the root of the derech eretz of the plishtim before bringing them to Matan Torah. Ki karoivu. Because really, just Emily Post, right? Is that her name? Emily Post, or just good old politeness, etiquette, how do you pronounce it? You know, see, I'm on target there, is it's really just an external shell for the same garbage of Mitzrayim. A person can be very polite, very well-mannered, and be the same garbage. We know. It's not coincidence. Part of the lesson, that we learned was the culture and Derech Eretz of the Germans, right? They were the most polite, well-mannered people that there were. Right? No one can beat the Germans in formality and Derech Eretz and politeness, culturedness. In fact, there was a person who said, I forgot who it was that said, but people, Rabbi Yochanan Lubavitch, when he used to give his talks, when he would talk about Shalei Osani Goy, and the difference between Jews and Goyim, he would say, and that means even the German Goy, he would say, when we thank Hashem for not making us a Goy, for raising us so much higher above the Goyim, it means even the German Goy, right? And for some people it irked, because at the end of the days the Germans were in a class of their own. There's someone, I forgot who, which Chachma was he meant, but there was a person who came after the Holocaust. He was an amputee. He was missing an arm. And he met, I forgot who it was, we'll call it Rabbi Pliny. And he said, I came before the Holocaust, I heard someone saying this, even German going, they're the same as everybody else. And I told him that, I don't know, my experience with the Germans shows that they're mamish, refined, better people. That's what I mentioned. Better people. So let me tell you, just consider an example. I'll give you an example of an experience I had when I was in Germany. I asked a German guy directions in the street. And he said, you go this way, and this way, and this way. And he ended by saying, is that not so? Meaning, you know, the politeness, the manner, like mechabed the other person by saying, go this way and that way, is that not so? So, you see, we're talking about a different level of human being. And then he said, and now you see my stump? He said, when that happened to me, when they cut off my arm, the Nazi said, it hurts, is that not so? I learned my lesson. The Chassam Sofer says that Hashem did not take them through any other Derech Eretz. Now I know it says Derech Eretz Kod Malatera, that has other pshatim, but Hashem did not take them through any Derech Eretz. Didn't first give them a good plishti training in order to learn how you act as a decent human being before taking them to Matan Torah. He took them straight to Matan Torah. He wanted them to be formed from scratch by the Torah's instructions. So if so, yes, we understand that there were certainly two levels of Geula, certainly two levels of going out of Mitzrayim. There was the technical level, we're free to go. But then there's the next level of actually leaving Mitzrayim and moving on to the next plane. So, again, I'm putting two pieces together, but if we're told by the Sfarim that these two washings represent two levels of purification from Yetzias Mitzrayim, we can take it in this way. This is how Rabbi Tzadik puts down the two levels of the Geula. There, he has a lot of other applications of this idea. But this is, we can already turn Urchatz, again, even if just for educational purposes, which is, again, our central focus at the Seder, this is something you can tell the children. Urchatz is the beginning of the Tara process. You wash once, and then we're going to wash again. We're going to reach an even higher level of the Tara process. Okay. Now we'll move on to Karpas. Karpas, again, on the basic level, is really technical. Like the Gemara says, what's the point of Karpas? Point of Karpas is that the kid should ask, what's the point of Karpas? That's the point. The kid should ask why. So that's that. But yet, here also, the Mefarshim say that it's not as simple as that. Mishlah says, for example, it's not just that you do something weird. You do something weird that has significance. The Ritva says the same thing. It has to have some connection to what's going on. And when the kids ask why you're doing this, there has to be some logic to your answer when you say that it's because it's a Leil HaSeder. Like, for example, could a person be Yetzer Kapa? So the father will say, no, I'm going to stand on my head on the table. There, I was Yetzer. The kids are going to ask why you're doing that. Oh, very good. So you should ask why did I do that. Now let's move on. No. We do something that does have connection to what's going on tonight. So therefore, the Shlah and others say that actually with Karpas, it's part of the agenda of manifesting Srara. We have a special hors d'oeuvre we don't usually have at the beginning of a Suda, right? You have an appetizer before the meal even starts. At fancy weddings, right? Well, at weddings, you have a whole smorgasbord before you even go wash, right? So this is what we're doing tonight. It's part of the, we're having a special appetizer even before the washing, something we don't do on ordinary nights. Why? Because tonight we're special people. Tonight is Derech Cheruz V'Srara. Tonight we're special people. We're Chashev. What's Chashev about us tonight? That was as we discussed last week. We're the most important people in the world tonight. And therefore, yes, we eat in style. We eat in style. A special hors d'oeuvre at the beginning of the Sukkah. Now here, I just want to take it a little further, get into a little bit of a discussion, which you might call something of a technical halachic discussion, but it's actually very interesting. What should you use for karpas? So now, practically speaking, at the end of the day, everybody has their minig. But it's important to realize that essentially, these minhagim are not minhagim of how you should be yotze karpas. The din is that you can use any vegetable you want. That's the din. I heard of a person who, in order to make tataka make it outstanding, he would dip pineapple into wine. That was what he used to, for karpas. I don't know if I would do that at my Seder, it would certainly arouse questions from the kids. But that was what he did for karpas. Dip pineapple into wine. That's certainly a way of expressing Sora the Cheus. Interesting. So there is really not really any essential kpeda to use this as opposed to that. The different things that are used, the different things that were recommended, or that were known from earlier times for different reasons. And here also, we'll spend a little time discussing this because this is actually an interesting discussion. The truth is that the name Karpas itself is something of a misnomer. Really, it should be called Yerek, or Tibul. Because Karpas is a specific vegetable which most people don't even use for Karpas. If you use a potato, you're not using Karpas. What's that? Karpas is a specific vegetable. There's no din to use karpas. Din is to dip a vegetable. To dip a vegetable. That's the din. Which vegetable? Any vegetable. Cucumber, tomato, whatever you want. Pineapple. So
isn't it dipping it into something salty?
We'll see in what? Not necessarily. Din is to dip a vegetable. Dip it in ketchup, mustard, whatever you want. It should be something that has a taste. Meaning, something that has a taste. What's that?
You bite
to it?
Pineapple. It's a very piyadamah, but it's not a yarek.
Well, it's not a yarek in the practical sense, but it's a yarek. It's a watermelon. So really it should be called tibul. In fact, as Rishani will hold, you should do it in charoises. We don't pass in that way, of course. Right, Rabbeinu Thompson, no, you can do it in salt water, vinegar, whatever you want. So you have to dip a vegetable in something. Now, many early Rishonim said that the minig is that there was an early minig of doing it with the vegetable called karpas. And that's why it started becoming called karpas. But really, it's not karpas per se. It's any vegetable. But let's... what is it? That's a good question. That's what we're going to discuss now. But it's interesting to explore a few of the different vegetables named by the Rishonim as preferred because of the symbolism that they hold. So, karpas, we'll work backwards. What is karpas, first of all? So the truth is that itself is not so clear. The Chasam Sofer says that Reb Nosson Adler put in a lot of effort to pinpointing exactly what karpas is, and his conclusion was that it is celery. I don't know if anybody here has ever seen, anybody use celery? You use celery.
Salt water or vinegar.
Okay, there you go. Karpas is celery, according to the Chasam Sofer. Now, what Now there's other possibilities. The Kiva Eger seems to suggest that karpas is parsley, which also I understand that there are people who use it. What's that? Oh, you use parsley, so you're also on the karpas track. Okay. Now this is the most famous. There's the most famous symbolism mentioned in karpas, and that is the words samach parech. At 660, as in 600,000, parech had the backbreaking labor, because that's what we're commemorating with the karpas.
660
as representing the 600,000. Yeah, 60,000. 60 riboy. And parech, backbreaking labor. So that's the significance of the karpas, be it parsley or celery. Another suggestion, the Kleisenberger Rebbe, based on Ritva, is that karpas is radish. Anybody use radish? That I've seen people use.
Horseradish?
No. Horseradish is mora. Horseradish is tamcha. But the radish. Because the Ritva says that the point is to commemorate the bitterness. Therefore, you should use something bitter like karpas, the Ritva says. And therefore, the Kleisenberger Rebbe says maybe that's where the minig of radish stems from. Whatever it is, we have these three different approaches as to what karpas is: celery, parsley, or radish. And that's the most basic significance. And what's the point of the significance? The point of the significance, once again, is to make a point of schmoozing about it with your kids. Right? That's the point of the significance. The point of its significance is to make a point of pointing it out to your kids as a point of interest. That's not why I wondered. I don't know. I'm going to still try to clarify it with a rabbinic authority. We always use potato. I was entertaining lately the idea of switching around, bouncing around, a few years this, a few years that, just because that way I'll get my kids to ask. I don't know if that's such a good idea. It could be you're supposed to stick with the minig. It's also possible that not, because we know that really anything will do. I don't know. I plan on consulting with the rabbinic authority about that. Whatever it is, let's...
Experiencing
the feeling. Right. There's another reason why potato is used. We'll get to that too. But actually, potato is certainly couldn't have been an original, because potato is young, relatively. Potato wasn't around in the time of the Rishonim. But there's a few other less known, very interesting significances to the karpas. Rabbeinu Manoach gives a whole list of interesting significances to the karpas. So, first of all, and again, what's the purpose of hearing all this? What's it going to contribute? It's going to contribute to your Seder in a very fundamental way. You'll have more things to tell your children. But remember, that is the theme that we're going to keep reiterating here. So Rabbeinu Manoach says as follows. He says, karpas, interestingly, was a vegetable that was considered auspicious for victory, and warriors would eat it before they went to war. It had a segula of victory, he says, and therefore we eat it tonight, marking our victory over the Egyptians. But even more interesting, he says, that they actually used to wear it in earlier times. Victors celebrating their victory would wear it tied to their head. Now this works out well, assuming that it's either radish or parsley or celery, because it's the type of thing that kind of, erect with the, I'm picturing the celery right now, erect with the whole thing coming off at the, you could see it being used as a decorative thing coming up at the top of the head. Radish is not all that erect, but also that effect of the leaves coming up. I don't know. Whatever it is, it's another very interesting point of significance that Rabbeinu Manoach makes about the karpas. It was something used as a sign of victory. They used to wear it on their heads as a sign of victory. Another thing he says is that the karpas was also known to be remedial. And he says that the Jews in Egypt used to eat it regularly in order to help try to remedy their broken bodies. So these are all interesting points to think of when you're eating the karpas, when you're using karpas. And if you're using something else, which I do, you can eat. You can still think these things zecher to the karpas. Okay. One last interesting thing that the Maharil also says about the karpas is that when you leave the karpas in the ground, this also might be very indicative of what it actually is. When you leave the karpas in the ground, after it ripens, it starts developing thorns or thorny appearance. And this is reminiscent of the thorny brush that the Jewish people had to use, they made them use when they were mixing it into the cement. So I don't know, you have to, what, which of these would get thorny? I don't know, parsley, radish. No, the potato is definitely not a candidate for karpas. But it might fit this last category, but it can't be karpas anyways, because it doesn't work historically unless the Rishonim were talking Beruach HaKodesh. But it's got to be, figure out from among these ones. Second best mentioned for karpas is, meaning after karpas, which is either celery, leek is mentioned too. The Maharil says that that's called karpas of the Nara. River karpas is leek. Okay, now this might actually work a little better with the Ritva, who also says that karpas is something bitter. Okay, these are interesting points. Again, the point of discussing this all is not to change your minig. If you want to change your minig, discuss it with a rabbinic authority, as I plan to do. But just to appreciate a little bit of this, some of the significance behind these different things. Now, on a completely different track, the other authorities cite something recommended by the Ramban. He recommended fennel. Shumar. Fennel. Why fennel? Because shumar is miloshin shmira. Little shimurim. That was why the Ramban recommended fennel. Now, how did the potatoes come about?
He never said it was karpas.
No, he says not to use karpas, use something else. Let's remember, the Gemara doesn't say karpas. Karpas is an innovation of the Rishonim.
Because fennel would have been remedial.
Yeah, fennel is remedial. But again, it doesn't have to be, the Ramban doesn't have to agree with the karpas concept. Right? Yeah, let's remember, karpas is not what's mentioned in the Gemara. We call it karpas, which is in a sense a misnomer, unless you're actually using karpas. Karpas was mentioned by the Rishonim as something, a good idea. In fact, one of the earlier sources, appealed by Rabbi Yosef Tuv Elam, I think it's actually in the Yosef of Shabbos HaGadol, he says he used karpas or coriander. Coriander. Meaning basically use whatever you want. That's really the Iker Adin. But these are different things that the Rishonim mentioned because of their different significance. If you want to know how the potatoes developed, well, besides the probable fact that that was simply what was most available and easily accessible, is with a lot of these other things you run into shilas of when do you make adama on it? Celery, for example. Is it classically eaten cooked or raw? Not so clear. And that could potentially develop into a shilas of what would you, if it's meant to be raw, you don't make adama when it's cooked. Meant to be eaten cooked, you don't make adama when it's raw. Some of these other things also have that issue. At least possibly, even though again there's enough dais in all directions. But that's why some tended towards things that are clearly either eaten raw or cooked. The potato, nobody eats raw, period. And that's why you have no issues as far as that goes. But again, the point here really more is to discuss in a broader way some of the different significances of these different things. Okay, that's as far as that goes. So that's for karpas. And again, as we said, these are the different significances, but the main point of the karpas is, once again, to express, well, actually we find almost contradictory explanations of what we're doing, but tell it all to your kids. Either to express that srara, like the Shla says, and others say, the Shla says, srara, you're eating a meal in style tonight, hors d'oeuvres before the meal. Or, as others say, it's actually the opposite. The opposite. Like the Ritva says, we're commemorating the slavery, and therefore you should eat something bitter, which the Kloisenberger Rebbe suggests, radish. And the Chassam Sefer says that the wonder of karpas, why it's surprising to the kids, is that usually a meal is bread-based. And who sits down for a meal of vegetables? The poor. The poor sit down for a meal of vegetables. So on the one hand, you're doing all kinds of things to manifest style, pomp. Well, on the other hand, one minute, we're eating a poor man's meal. That's our meal for tonight? A little bit of vegetable dipped in vinegar? So Chassam Sofer says it's the paradox created by the poor impression that the Karpas gives against the other stylish impressions that we give on that night. That should arouse the kids to ask questions. So again, take all these things, take all these ideas and use them. The main point is not the ideas themselves, but again, the ikar function of the Karpas is, so you have interesting things to tell the kids. That is the function of the Karpas, as the Gemara tells us. Okay. Once we're on that subject, okay, so we also have the different things that are the famous concept of using the salt water, symbolic of the tears, or vinegar, symbolic of that we were saved. Shlomo says, Miyad me'avel v'choymeitz, a person who would have done us evil. You also were from the used choymeitz, chomets. Okay, that's as far as Karpas goes. Now, we move on to Yachatz. Yachatz also superficially is a pure technicality. Or not just superficially. The Parshat of Pshat and Yachatz is that it's a pure technicality. You're supposed to use a broken matzah. How do you get a broken matzah? You break a matzah, then you have a broken matzah. Right? The point is because you're supposed to use a broken matzah for the mitzvah of eating matzah. In order to have a broken matzah, you break a matzah. But here also there is more significance to the Yachatz. We break it in half. We break it in half. First of all, note to the kids, bring all these points out, that look, we're behaving like poor people now. Poor people have to break their bread and hide some of it away. We have to ration. This is what the Eden felt like in Mitzrayim. They had a little bit of food, they had to break it, put some away for later. We can't eat it all now, right? Point that out. You're trying to re-experience, you're trying to recreate the experiences. Point that out to the kids. And when you put it away for later, you take the bigger piece, right? You take the bigger piece, you wrap it up, you put it away. So of course there's the Zechel Nisharoisam Tzruis Bisimloisam. You have the Zecher of how they actually went out carrying the bread wrapped up in their clothes. Point that out to the kids too. Some people have the minig. If you have the minig, that's of actually walking around the table with it on your shoulder. But besides that, also you also know to the kids that the truth is that this is representative of how we eat our lives. We're putting the bigger half away for tzafun. We're breaking it in half. We're putting the bigger half away for tzafun. We take our lives and we dedicate the bulk of our lives to investing in the future. Tzafun. Hatoiv ha-tzafun la-tzadikim. The toiv that's hidden away for the tzadikim for later times to come. That's actually what the matzah is. We'll soon get to the deeper significance of the matzah later. Waiting for the Afikoyman. So, because Asid is going to be greater, right? So, Yiddishkeit is all about Yachatz. Yiddishkeit is all about Yachatz, yes. The basic way you have to use Olam Hazeh, but what we're mainly doing in Olam Hazeh, the bulk of our efforts at Olam Hazeh, the majority, the bigger half, the better half of everything we're doing in Olam Hazeh, is hoarding it away, putting it away, sending it away for the future, hiding it away for a place where we don't see now, and getting to it later in the future. Okay, this is in a general way, just an overview, if we'll call it, of the beginning of the Seder, and the true discussion really begins at Magid, which will start Bli Neder Bezras Hashem next week. In the coming weeks, we will in a general way follow along in the Seder of the Haggadah, even though we'll often be more in the style of an overview. So you might want to bring a Haggadah, but you certainly don't need to. You won't be lost without it, because it's not going to be mamish a line for line sort of shir. Okay. Oh, I forgot one last point about the Karpas also, is that it represents also the Ksoines Pasim, the Karpas, the words Ksoines Pasim. I don't know where the Resh comes in, but the Kuf with the Pas, Ksoines Pasim, which reminds us of the original cause of going down to Mitzrayim. Alright.